Before I run right into acquisition, let me just talk about the Coast Guard briefly, in case some of your listeners aren't as familiar with us. We're the smallest of the five armed services. We're also a federal law enforcement agency. In fact, we're the only agency in the federal government that's both a military service and a federal law enforcement agency. And we have about 42,000 men and women in uniform and about 7,000 government civilians, about 500 of which work right here in acquisition, which helps support us. And most people know us for our maritime safety missions, such as search and rescue, maritime security, such as drug law enforcement, and, of course, national defense. We have patrol boats over in Iraq right now. But so that's what we do as an organization, and our acquisition programs are set up to support those men and women with the right types of equipment.
So you have had problems in the past, especially with the Deepwater program. And it seems to me, from what I'm seeing, that you have a realignment of how you handle some of those acquisition and procurement issues at this point.
We have, and what you're referring to in the Deepwater program was, as the Coast Guard looked at itself in the late 1990s, we realized that eight of our major capital assets, which was pretty much all of our large capital assets, our large ships, our large aircraft, our large command and control systems, were all going to end their service lives and become obsolete in this decade and a little bit in the next decade. So there was developed a program by which they would all be replaced simultaneously. At the time, the decision was made that that might be too big for the Coast Guard to do itself, and we used a commercial lead system integrator. It was a joint venture between Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman. And as you alluded to, although we had many successes under that program, we also had some projects that didn't run as smoothly as we would like them to. And, you know, we are public servants. We're very aware that we're spending the taxpayers' dollar. And we felt that by reforming some of our acquisition processes and, frankly, bringing that lead system integrator in-house, we now operate as the lead system integrator as the Coast Guard, that we could do a more efficient job. And in a nutshell, that's largely what we did. We left the commercial lead system integrator, brought all those programs into the Coast Guard, and are now using, very responsible, accountable, documented processes by which we're proceeding with those programs. And we can talk about some of the projects, too.
Yeah, we're speaking with Rear Admiral Gary Bloor. He is the Assistant Commandant for Acquisition at the Coast Guard. Yeah, and you've gotten, I believe, if I'm not wrong, a couple of new ships recently delivered that have been deployed. And tell us what's going on with the ship program.
We have the largest cutter we have is called the National Security Cutter. We've delivered our first one, which is the Coast Guard Cutter Bertoff, and it's out in Alameda, California, which is its home port. In fact, as we speak right now, it's off the coast of San Diego firing its weapons. It's going through weapons testing with the Navy.
I think I can hear it.
Good ears.
Yeah, they have to be very good. But it's out there testing its weapon systems, and hopefully it'll be certified by the Navy shortly to operate and fire with them. And we have the second in the line, which is the Coast Guard Cutter Weishi, which will be delivered late this summer, early this fall. It's being built down in Pascagoula, and the third one's just started its fabrication. And that will be a total line of eight cutters. And those cutters are completely compatible with the United States Navy. We get tremendous support from the United States Navy on our acquisition projects. In fact, they provided many of the weapon systems. And you could expect to see that Coast Guard cutter deploying with the Navy, staying a little bit closer to home for the Homeland Security mission, but then, if necessary, going on extended visits overseas if it needs to operate with our Navy.
Talk to us a little bit, Admiral Bloor, about the role that technology played in delaying some of these projects, because there are new capabilities that these cutters and some of your other projects will have that you really didn't have before.
Well, one of the primary things that's different is we were very focused on making sure that all the cutters and aircraft and our command and control systems could operate as a system. And, you know, systems engineering means different things to different people. But what it meant to us was that a cutter could electronically speak to and export its common operating picture, that is, the other boats that were around it, the other ships that were around it, to any other Coast Guard unit, any other place in the world. And they largely do this with having common software packages and using satellite uplinks and downlinks. So we were very, very focused on that. We did early on in the program get involved in what I might call some technologies that weren't quite ready for production. We're very conscious now as a small service, because we have a very, very small developmental budget, that we really want to use mature technologies that are, you know, technologically mature and ready for production. And we've been doing that for the last 2 years and have had great results. But that's probably been the biggest improvement, because it's such a force multiplier to our cutters and aircraft, just that they can communicate so well. And if you have a moment, I'll give you a specific example.
Sure,
love to.
Okay, I know sometimes acquisition gets a rap for taking a while, but with the right imperative and the right government employees that we have here, we can speed it up sometimes. There's a direction finder that we use on our aircraft that we discovered about 18 months ago. It's called Direction Finder 430. The name isn't that important, but it just about quintuples the range by which one of our aircraft can home on a distress signal. So whereas before we had to close to 5 or 6 miles, now we're picking up those distress signals at 60 and 70 miles.
Wow.
So they're a couple $100,000 a piece. It's a fairly complicated install. But we set out 18 months ago, and we sat down with our folks and said, look, this is an imperative. You know, literally lives can be lost if we don't get this equipment installed. So in 18 months, we've now installed that in about 80 of our aircraft. We have lots of great success stories about how it's being used. That's a little bit over half our fleet. We have about another 35 aircraft that are currently having it installed as we have this conversation, and we'll finish the fleet by the end of this calendar year. So that's a good example of it. It's a great technology. It's technologically mature, production mature. We've installed it on our aircraft, and it's doing real work for, you know, the American public right now.
Well, we thank you for the service of the Coast Guard, and we thank you for bringing us that update.
Well, thank you very much for hosting me, and I hope especially those that might be interested in being government federal civilians, will use the link you have on your website to take a look at it.
You have jobs open. Is that what you're saying?
We always have job open for new people. We have a lot of good people here, but we're always welcoming more.
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news. Now,